Joseph by John Gifford Bellett. Chapter 3. Genesis 42-44. These chapters give us the fourth section of the history. In the preceding sections, we have seen, first, Joseph cast out by his brethren, secondly, his brethren filling up the measure of their sin, thirdly, Joseph brought to glory and joy in the midst of those strangers among whom his brethren's enmity had cast him. And all these we have seen setting forth Jesus, Israel, and the church. But Israel is not always to lie in their blood, or be forgotten. Their sins and iniquities are soon to be remembered no more, as soon, indeed, as sore affliction brings them to Jesus and to repentance. So here, stress of famine in the land of Canaan leads his brethren to seek that help which was now laid for them on Joseph alone. Joseph, however, had something more to do for them than simply to supply their present need. He must prepare not only a blessing for them, but them for a blessing. And though the method which he had to take may be strange in their sight for a while, yet love and wisdom were to direct it all from beginning to end. In order to bless them with real blessing as he purposed, he must lead them to repentance, and he orders his behavior before them now according to this purpose. He had once come to them, and they had said, "Behold, this dreamer cometh." Now they come to him, and he says, "Ye are spies, ye are spies." He makes himself strange and speaks roughly to them, and by this he calls their sin to remembrance. "We are verily guilty," say they, "concerning our brother." But he hides himself while all this is going on. He speaks to them by an interpreter. It was indeed his work, but it was his strange work. He was doing his act, but it was his strange act. He orders circumstances so as to let sorrow work repentance, but he does not yet show himself. For all this may be the way of his hand, but it was not the way of his heart. In secret, though unknown to them, he enters into the very sorrows that he was occasioning. In their affliction, like one that is better than he was afflicted. He would not have put on this rough mood, could he have helped it. But by this their iniquity was to be purged. And this was all the fruit to take away their sin. His love, therefore, must be firm and wise, as well as tender. They had once bound and sold their poor brother to strangers, and now a stranger takes and binds one of them. All this was fixing the arrow of conviction in their hearts, there to spend its venom and lay the sentence of death deeply in them. He dismisses the rest with present supplies for their houses, charging them not to see his face again except their youngest brother was with them, for he must know whether they had as yet the affections of children and of brothers, or whether they were still, as once, when he had known them, reckless of a brother's cries and a father's bereavement. Ere they departed, however, he commands his steward to restore every man's money to his sack, but this was only to carry on the same work of repentance in their now awakened hearts. And so it does, for on opening their sacks and discovering their money, their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, "What is this that God hath done to us?" The money in their sacks will not let them forget that, though they may now have turned their backs on that stranger in Egypt who spoke so roughly to them and called their sin to remembrance, yet God's eye was still upon them, and God had still to do with them. Thus the work goes on in their souls. They had been convicted, and godly sorrow was then working fear in them. And very soon much more than sorrow and fear is seen in them, for being returned home and letting their father know that Benjamin's presence with them was the only condition on which they dared to hope for a fresh supply from Egypt, Reuben and Judah at once stand forth in the spirit of self-sacrifice. "Slay my two sons," says Reuben, "if I bring him not unto thee." "I will be surety for him," says Judah, "of my hand shalt thou require him." All this blessedly shows how repentance was yielding its meet fruit in them. but to aggravate their grief and thus still to carry on the work in their souls. Jacob seems now for the first time to come to a suspicion that they had been guilty concerning Joseph. He had before said, "An evil beast hath devoured him," but now it is, "Me have ye bereaved of my children." He seems to say of them, "I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me." All this must have stirred the arrow afresh in their hearts, that it might still be doing there its needed work. But Jacob at last consents to let Benjamin go, and after all this exercise of heart, and with Benjamin in their hand, more prevailing than all the honey and balm and spices which they carried, they return to Joseph. On seeing Benjamin, Joseph is moved to new affections and fresh kindness, and he gives his house commandment that all these men should dine with him at noon. But kindness and roughness works alike with an evil conscience. To the defiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. A shaken leaf might well frighten the brethren now, for conscience had made cowards of them all. They were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and other thoughts await them there. They are seated before Joseph, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And they marveled one at another while they ate and were merry. So wisely was Joseph calling in every passion of the mind, and weaving them together, wonder with fear, and gratitude with joy, that there might be a thorough renewal unto repentance. Thus does the work go on, and prosperously too, but it has some way to travel ere it reach the perfection that Joseph had purposed. He lays a farther plan for fully testing whether indeed a child's heart and a brother's heart were in them. Joseph's cup is put into Benjamin's sack, and they are again dismissed with fresh supplies. But now was the crisis. Benjamin, the cup being found on him, becomes forfeited to Joseph. This was the solemn moment in the whole proceeding, and the question is, how will the once murderous brethren and the once thankless children now carry themselves? Are they still what they once were, or has the heart of flesh been given them? Will the sorrows of Benjamin move them with whom the cries of Joseph could not prevail, or will the thought of the grief of their aged father at home plead with their hearts as it once refused to plead? These were the questions, and they get their triumphant answer. Judah stands before Joseph in the shame of confessed iniquity. They were all innocent touching the cup, but they were not so touching their brother, and this their sin only is before them now. "What shall we say? What shall we speak?" says he. "How shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants." Joseph for a moment feigns as though their former iniquity, thus confessed, were nothing to him. Benjamin is his, and he must remain with him. Then Judah draws near and again pleads as with the bowels of a son and a brother for Jacob and for Benjamin. "The lad" and "my father" are the oft-repeated burden of Judah's sorrows now. He is ready to abide a bondman himself, only let "the lad" go back to "his father." Let the father's heart be comforted, and the brother's innocency preserve him, and Judah will be satisfied, come to himself what may. Thus did Judah plead, proving himself indeed one whom his brethren might praise, and now nothing more is asked for. Joseph had not been willingly afflicting his brethren. All his way was only to lead them to this place of repentance. He meets them now not as a judge, but as a brother. His love could no longer hide itself. "Cause every man to go out from me," said he, and then he made himself known to his brethren. He showed to them his thoughts, how kind they were. He set free their evil conscience and bound up their broken hearts. The channels were now cleared, and grace and blessing flow in through living, refreshing, and gladdening streams. So it will be with Israel and the Lord. The Lord has now retired to his place, the place to which Israel's enmity had sent him, but made to him of God the place of honor and of family delights, as Egypt was to Joseph. But in their affliction, by and by, they will seek him in that distant place, Hosea 5:15, and he will then be found of them, and, in richer wisdom and love than even that of Joseph, lead them to repentance, sit over them as a refiner and purifier of silver, give them a broken and contrite heart, cause them to look on him whom they pierced, and then open to them a fountain for all their sorrows. For though he has spoken against them, he remembers them still, and in all their afflictions has been afflicted, and will then rejoice over them. Joseph no longer spoke to them by an interpreter, no longer hid himself as with a veil from his repentant brethren. Your eyes see, said he, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And so shall Israel's eyes see the king in his beauty, and the veil shall be taken away. And with a surer and readier love than that with which Joseph fell on his brethren's neck and kissed them, will Jehovah Jesus return to them. Leviticus 26, verses 40 to 42. I will say, It is my people, and they shall say, The Lord is my God.